Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Snowbound on Lakeshore Drive, getting out of town. Won't get my car back till springtime comes around. Thought that I would make it, but oh boy, was I wrong. I'm sitting here on Lakeshore Drive, singing this sad song. I'm stuck to Lakeshore Drive till the snowplow comes along. Anywhere to me. When I took Lakeshore Drive, should have brought my ski. I'm stuck here on Lakeshore Drive, trying not to freeze.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's green, so don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Here he is, Mike Novak. And they pay me for this, folks. Okay.
One more time.
So, Snappy J Dog, who's on Twitter here, just tweets a couple of minutes ago, says, "Oh, there you are. Okay." I think she thought we'd been replaced by a music program.
That parody is made by one of the original guys who wrote the song Lakeshore Drive, right? Skip Haynes? What's his name? Jeremiah. So
right, yeah.
That's a great song.
In case you didn't catch it and you kind of started cruising in with the song, listening to Lakeshore Drive, that was Alyota, Haynes, and Jeremiah who did that back in 1971, before my time in Chicago, actually. I had to come to that song late. This past week with the snowstorm, big snowstorm.
Did you see those poor people out there just completely buried on Lakeshore? I felt so bad for them.
And that's why I love that Skip Haynes went back into the studio. He says, "Oh, well, I got to put something together here. let's catch just a little more of this." I got to stop that.
Lots of buttons.
Lots of buttons. All right, let's try. Don't
push my button.
That's right.
There ain't no road to back in.
See, I grew up with this song.
When I took Lakeshore Drive, should have brought my ski. I'm stuck here on Lakeshore Drive, trying not to freeze.
And you did have to look at those pictures. I got to ask you, because I'm kind of torn. There was Richie Daly cheerleading for his staff and saying,
yeah.
"No, they were, you know,
they did a fine job."
It was a great job, Brownie kind of moment there, wasn't it? Heck of a job, Brownie.
Yeah.
Heck of a job.
Heck of a job
there, kids.
People have been stranded on Lakeshore Drive for 3 hours, but our plows are great.
And nobody can get in their alleys. And
God.
But you know what?
I feel bad for the cars on the streets, parked on the streets. Have you seen some of those? They look like igloos have just formed around them.
Let me tell you something about that. There are folks in my block, and I wouldn't have thought this about my block. I've had doubts about my block in the past, but I'll tell you something. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday, the day of the storm, our alley was clear. And at 9 a.m., and I've posted this on Facebook earlier in the week, the before and after photos. So if you go to Mike Novak on Facebook, you can see that earlier in the week. And they were industrious. They carved out a way to get out of the neighborhood through the alley. The street was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
There were no plows there. But the alley was clear by 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Because of the residents, right? The city didn't plow it.
Right.
No,
the residents did.
Yeah.
Right. We all got our shovels and
It was like a block party at our place too, like up and down the alley. Hey, how's it going? Everyone's just shoveling.
That was the other thing. The community came out.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know half those people lived in my neighborhood. Maybe they don't.
They do. They just never cross paths with you unless they can't get out of the alley.
Exactly.
So you're all stuck together.
So there we are, and we cleared out the alley, and then people started clearing out the street. So by the next day, the street was clear, and a plow still hadn't come through.
Mm-hmm.
So you could get to the street, not very well, but all the spaces were carved out.
Are the chairs up?
The chairs are out. There's a vacuum cleaner.
On TV someone had a microwave, like standing on a microwave.
Yeah, next to my house, there's a vacuum cleaner. There's a bit of fence, like a picket fence. That's like 6 feet of picket fence.
I totally support that in blizzard conditions. If you dig out your spot and you've done the sweat and the work.
Here's the problem I have with that.
I understand that.
If you dig out your spot, you really should get it. All right. That's the other point I was going to make is that I look at some of these.
That's just like an unwritten rule, I think.
Neighborhoods, though, where the alleys and the streets are still covered in snow. I'm thinking, what are you doing? Waiting for help? Get out. Grab a shovel.
Yeah, they got to do it
get
themselves.
Get out there. You know, that's the way this works. So that's why, in a sense,
if you're too lazy to go out and do the work yourself, then you are not entitled to convenient parking. I'm sorry.
Right.
I am sorry. This is Chicago.
And I can't
deal with it.
Get all upset with Daly's pronouncement that everything went great. I'm sorry. It was 20 inches of snow. And you know it's going to happen. You just know it's going to happen. It's a hard thing to plow all that stuff
mm-hmm.
away. I can't believe I'm defending Richie Daly. So there you go. I'm not really. I have to say, I really haven't made up my mind whether I'm upset or not.
There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
So I look on the news last night, and they're doing this story about it. This alley still has 6 feet of snow. Well, why are you people?
That's my bone to pick. Like, by midway through the day on Wednesday, obviously, we didn't have to come into work, thank goodness, and we were all at home hibernating and stuff, and we have the news on, and they're like, there's snow on the ground, there's snow on the ground. And after, like, a while, I was like, really? Really? That's all it was, is they're talking about the snow and people getting buried in. Everybody knew. Everybody could look out the window. It was like, what's happening in Egypt? What's going on else in the world? Nope, it's snow, snow, snow.
Dick Kay yesterday made the best observation about the snowstorm ever, which is to say, he said, I'm so glad for the snowstorm for one reason. I didn't have to watch that insufferable Super Bowl coverage. And he's right. I didn't see any Super Bowl coverage this week because it was all snow.
Yeah.
Yay!
I just want the Steelers
Yay, snowstorm!
I'm all Steelers today. I haven't forgiven the Packers yet, and I never will.
I love my Green Bay Packers.
Oh, don't do that to me.
Packers.
See, I'm torn,
Packers
though. I'm NFC. I'm an NFC baby. I'm a Bears girl.
Hey, Mike Sanders, do we have I Love My Green Bay Packers?
You are an evil man.
We can track down that song.
Evil, evil, evil man. That's the only green I don't like, when Bay and Packers are on the end of it. All the other kind of green I like.
Come on, give them something. You got to dust them
a
friggin'
grapes.
Bone.
It's complete sour grapes. I will totally admit it.
Sanders is laughing. And by the way, for those of you who are listening to Our Town on your wave wherever this morning or waking up with that, and Mike and Julia Hsu were talking about putting shampoo, a couple of drops of shampoo in water and wiping off your plant leaves. Yes. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
But dilute it.
But dilute it, yes.
Right.
don't shampoo your leaves.
Don't cover your thing in Prel.
Right. You know, some people use just water on their plants. But the idea is that your plants get coated with dust. And when they get coated with dust, you know, they can't perform efficiently. They're cleaning the air for you, but...
That's where their pores are in their leaves.
Exactly.
That's where they breathe.
The stomata.
And as you were saying, outside plants have the advantage of rain.
That's right. If it rains, it washes some of that stuff off, and so they can do their jobs. But indoors, unless it's raining every couple of days or every week.
And most people don't shower their plant when they water it.
And that's another way you can do it. I've been known to do that. I take my plants into the shower with me. It's very exciting.
Mental image I didn't want. It burns. Ow!
But, I occasionally will take a plant and put it in the shower.
What about if you did the spritzer bottle with water and just
and wipe
cloth.
It off?
Yeah,
nice and easy. Okay. Oh, by the way, Snappy J Dog wrote she got freaked out because she couldn't find the frequency.
Yeah. Oh, there we are.
So, yeah, no, it's 8:20 a.m.
Lord knows how much snow is on that satellite dish.
Yeah, I was wondering,
when we came here on Thursday to get out, you couldn't get to the satellite dish. It was waist deep. By the way, it drifted. Mm-hmm. I mean, waist deep on a full-grown human being, not like a child. Like, it was 3.5-4 feet encompassed, and you couldn't get to the back gate, the garbage cans. We had to get a second plow company to come in and just make it so that the garbage people could come and pick up the bins. It was... amazing amount of snow.
And
so
I have a message from Rick DeMaio. He says, he sent this this morning, seasonal snowfall is up to almost 49 inches. When we reach 50, which could happen any minute now.
Yeah, really?
It will be the first time ever Chicago has experienced 4 consecutive 50-inch seasonal snowfalls. And the 8 a.m. update, snowfall ranges from 1 to 1.5 inches across much of the area, with another 0.5 to 1 inch expected before 3 p.m. Totals might reach close to 3 inches in some locations, with a general 2 inch north of I-80 to the state line. Less than 1 inch is expected across central Illinois. Snowfall has been wet due to temperatures in the mid to the upper 20s, which I'm grateful for. So that it actually melts a little bit, which is a good thing. On the show today, and let's get him on the line. There's a big announcement. Oh, quick question to those of you who like to log on to MikeNovak.net, www.MikeNovak.net. We were experiencing some technical issues this morning. Heather, see if you can get...
I still have a blue screen, but on Twitter, we did get an answer. I don't know. Swarren said he got the page as normal, so it could be if you have...
We're having trouble with the homepage, and I'm wondering how many of you out there can get to the homepage. Help us out, kids. Let us know. I have a feeling it depends on the model computer you have.
Yeah, these are older models, so I think you might be right.
These are the oldest models here.
No, they're not the oldest. They actually have color monitors.
Oh, okay.
But...
we're...
There is probably a little man with a loincloth painting on a cave wall inside the modem here.
So let us know. Go to www.mikenovak.net and tell me if you're getting the home page there. Because I know this week's show page shows up. And you can just get that by going mikenovak.net/this week.
Yeah, I get everything but the home page.
So everything's there except the homepage, huh?
For this computer, anyway.
All right.
Lord knows.
Let us know, if you can, we'd appreciate that.
We have
that.
Gremlins. Lord knows.
You know, send me an email at mike@mikenovak.net, or go on Twitter, or go on Facebook, and let us know what's going on, or give us a call at 773-838-9278. To start the show, I got a big announcement. You know, I meant to get big announcement music. Sanders, give me some big announcement music. And that was, because I am, and we're going to have a fellow on in just a second who's part of this conspiracy. His name is Don Fenwick with Cruise Works, Inc. Big Garden Cruise coming up in what?
You're going to go on a cruise in like the warm
I was
going to
get
Caribbean?
That music. How about the Ooh Wee Baby? Let me take
or the theme. What about the Love Boat?
No love boat. No.
Come on.
No.
It's the Love Boat, the love of gardening.
No. Yep, but it's going to be a big cruise next year about this time. Me and a bunch of people, going to the Caribbean.
Are we
going to
broadcast live from the cruise?
Oh, that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, then I'd get to go, right? I just want to go.
I know. You just want to be on the cruise.
Yeah. In February, after a winter like this? Gee, I wonder why.
Well, maybe it'll be 60 degrees next year.
If we go on a cruise, it will be.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to... Well, we'll tell you about that in a second. In the second hour... Well, then, of course, Rick DeMaio, weather, bottom of the hour. In the second hour, I alluded to this, or I started to talk about this last week, actually, which is the USDA deciding in its infinite wisdom that they were going to unleash genetically enhanced or whatever, GMO, genetically modified, genetically whatever they call it now. It's GE,
lab
GMO.
Plants.
Yeah, whatever. Alfalfa on the public. And then on Friday, you probably didn't know that you might have missed this because I'm sure it didn't make a whole lot of headlines. Sugar beets. The green light's been given to sugar beets. There are folks who think that perhaps this is the opening of the floodgates for all kinds of GE products that are going to go into the market. So we are going to talk to Teresa Marquez.
And by GE, you mean genetically altered or do you mean like General Electric?
No.
When you say GE products.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, you know, it's what they now call it. It's gone right out of my head.
Genetically
I'm
engineered?
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Genetically engineered. Because I'm used to the GMO, but now more folks are used, they use them interchangeably, GMO or GE, genetically engineered. And so the alfalfa was given the green light a week ago and on Friday, sugar beets. And we'll see what that means when we talk to Teresa Marquez, chief marketing executive from Organic Valley, which is one of the companies that's been fighting this along with others. I know she'll have a lot to say about that. And then on the Good Growing segment, Kim Marson from Sweet Home Organics is making a return visit to the show as she gets ready for her organic farm. You know, I might ask her how the alfalfa thing and the sweet pea thing is going to affect her. And you know what? Being from Team Chard, it's important to talk about the beets because, remember, a chard is just a mutant beet, as we discovered.
Yes.
So those plants could be affected by planting the GMO beets. So... there you go. All right, let us go to line one and bring in Don Fenwick from Cruise Works, Inc. How you doing, Don?
Well, good morning, Mike. How are you?
I asked you first.
Okay, I'm just fine. We're facing another boring sunny day here. I don't know what the weather is like back there in Chicago.
Sunny day in the middle of L.A., yeah. you're on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California.
That's correct.
Don, I don't like you already.
I like him. I'm just jealous.
Yeah, I know. And Don, as I said, is with an outfit called Cruise Works, Inc., and he approached me a little while ago and said, say, Mike, you want to go on a cruise and bring some people with you and maybe go to some gardens in the middle of the winter in the Caribbean and see what kind of stuff you can find there that's different from Zone 5? You know, more like Zone 11, which is basically what the gardens in the Caribbean are. And I said, gee, okay, why not? So we've started putting this together. And you can find this information if we ever get the homepage of my website up again, and we're having issues, internet issues this morning, wouldn't you know it, as I launched this thing. But I've got a whole page devoted to this trip with incredible photos of the kinds of gardens and the cruise line, which is Norwegian Cruise Line, that will take us to the Caribbean. You've done this a lot, Don. Tell me what a trip like this, because I've never been on a cruise before. What do you expect if you've never been on one of these?
Well, you expect the best vacation value you've ever had. I mean, think about it. You pack and unpack one time. You climb aboard a floating resort, and it takes you to your ports of call. I mean, and it includes all your meals, your entertainment. And by the way, the entertainment on this particular ship, which, by the way, is the Norwegian Sun, the entertainment is fantastic. Norwegian Cruise Line has the best production shows, I think, on the seas.
So wait. So what? When you say production show, what kind of?
I mean, lots of singers and dancers, and in some cases, entire they'll do abbreviated versions of entire Broadway musicals.
So if we go on this cruise, you're entitled to partake in any of those festivities there on the boat?
It's all there for you, and, absolutely.
And there's no extra charge for that? Is it
No charge at all.
So how does that work? Is it a first come, first serve, or is there always enough room for everybody on the boat?
There's always enough room. Normally, they have two sittings. They have an early sitting or a late sitting. And on this ship, by the way, they're having what they call freestyle dining, which means you can dine anytime you want. There's a bunch of different restaurants to choose from. And you can go where you like, when you like.
So like you say, it's like a floating city.
It is.
It's a floating resort. It is.
Yeah.
My son's father had a gig on a cruise ship for 6 months doing lights and sound for a Blue Man Group show, and I believe it was also Norwegian. And they did that for about 6 months. They toured the Caribbean and down into Cozumel, Mexico, and produced the show. So like you, he got to go on a cruise and get paid for it. Stinkers.
We've been doing it for 25 years now, putting groups on cruise ships.
Uh-huh.
And I must say, I've never tired of it. In fact, I'm always looking forward to doing more of it.
And how have cruises changed in 25 years, Don?
First of all, the ships are much, much larger now than they were when they began.
Uh-huh.
And there's a whole lot more to choose to do on board ship now.
It's not just shuffleboard anymore, huh?
No. I mean, but if you want to gamble, you can do that. If you want to go to the gym, you can do that. If you want to just lie out on deck, you can do that. I mean, there's all kinds of activities one can choose to do.
And
in our case, of course, in addition to visiting some wonderful ports of calls and some gardens that I'm looking forward to seeing, you can enjoy the host, Mr. Mike Novak, as well, who's going to be doing some private functions while we're aboard.
Be careful how you describe that. Actually, I will do some.
You're the one who brought up taking the plants in the shower. He's fine.
We'll do some talking about gardening. We'll talk about Zone 5 plants, of course, because I do a lot of garden talks around Chicago area. And that will be part of what we do there. And who knows, maybe I'll even whip out my entertainment hat and do something silly.
There you go.
Which I've been known to do. And some of the ports of call, the cruise leaves from Port Canaveral, Florida.
It is round trip from Port Canaveral, right. Going to Nassau in the Bahamas, St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and the Norwegian Cruise Line's private island, which they call Great Stirrup Key.
Yeah, which
They have an island?
They have their own island.
Wow! But the gardens on that are pretty.
Yes.
That was the thing that kind of took me aback, is I thought, oh my goodness, they have their own island.
Most of the cruise lines are doing that right now. The Princess has one, Holland America has their own private island, Norwegian Cruise Line has their own, Royal Caribbean has their own in Dominican Republic, as a matter of fact, I believe.
And you're not going to believe this, kids, but I actually researched this. And by the way, we're talking to Don Fenwick from Cruise Works, Inc., and if you came in the middle of this, we're planning a cruise to the Caribbean.
Did we tell them when it is? It's February 25th of next year.
Right. I was just about to say that. Yeah, so you got some time to think about it and get on board because, you know, it's not cheap. It's not like, you know, $50 or something. You know, it's more long.
Well, if you get an all-inclusive...
It is entirely
you got it. It's
all-inclusive.
A chunk. It's worth it, though.
Because
I mean,
correct.
That's once you have that, your expenses are done outside of any spending money in the ports.
Yeah, you know, it starts at about 7:50 or thereabouts.
I believe it's 7.59 per person is the opening price, right?
Yeah, when you say opening price, what does that mean then?
Well, that means that it's an inside cabin without a window.
Okay, and if you want a window, then...
If you want a window, it's going to be a few dollars more, but it's still very reasonable.
Yeah, and if you're sitting in your room just staring out the window anyway, you're not
that's why they
taking
have the
advantage
deck
of. And I was about to say that I've actually done some research on some of these gardens, and they really look interesting, you know, because I had never thought about Caribbean gardens before, and a lot of the plants you grow in the winter in your home, orchids there are just so many different things. They grow outdoors.
Well, they're tropicals,
you know,
aren't they?
I know, the tropicals, the exotic tropicals. And,
well, it's the Caribbean.
Yeah, so it includes the Ardastra Gardens on Nassau. That's a more than 70-year-old preserve. They attract wild birds of all species. And then there's the St. Peter Great House and Botanical Gardens. That's on St. Thomas. Yeah, and apparently it's up in the mountains, so you got to...
Really?
It sounds just awesome.
Yeah. Now, you know, will you guys be doing garden chats and tours?
Yeah, we'll be getting tours of these gardens. And then the San Juan Botanical Garden, also known as the Botanical Garden of the University of Puerto Rico. It's actually a 300-acre urban garden of native and exotic flora. And then we might even get to, you said there's a chance we might even get to the rainforest there.
The El Yunque, yes.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we can get, it's a very interesting rainforest. It's hard to get a rainforest there because you need some mountains. And, you know, you need that the wind to blow against them and dump rain. So all of this is online. Go to MikeNovak.net. What's our situation
it's
with?
It's still blue. And the tweets we're getting is that... John Torrance wrote us back. He only got the show page. Homepage is blue. He's got Safari on a Mac. iPhone 4 this morning, blue screen, no problem on the MacBook Pro. So
some people are getting the homepage.
We're getting more blue pages than non-blue page responses.
Uh-huh.
But so something's awry.
Yeah, something. We're having issues, and the webmaster, Kathleen, is on it
right
now.
She's on it.
If you want to go see the information about the sea cruise, you can go straight to that page, and it'll probably load up for you. And it's www.mikenovak.net, and that's MikeNovak.net/seacruise.htm. And that will take you right to the page if you're having trouble.
You can access everything else on the page if you're getting the blue screen on the homepage. If you go to this week's show link and click the links at the top, you just can't access the homepage. The rest of the site's available.
We have no idea why.
No, we haven't the foggiest.
Yeah, so.
Or they can give us a call at CruiseWorks, Inc. at 1-800-876-6664, and we'll be happy to send out information on the cruise to everyone.
Yeah, and that's what I tell people at the site, and we can give that number again because the number is there. And you can also write to CruiseWorks. You can go to their website, which I have a link to there as well, which is cruise-works.com, correct?
That's absolutely right.
The number again is 800-876-6664. And then the address, if you're a writing kind of person, 7033 Sunset Boulevard, Suite 214, Hollywood, California, 92008.
90028.
Whoops! Typo! Okay, I'll have to fix it. That's why you're on the show, so we can get this right. Whoa! Well, I was working fast yesterday. So, this, again, is about a year from now, and I'm hoping some folks will want to take advantage of it. I'll be talking about it on the show as we go on in the next few weeks and until we fill the thing up. And, Don, you know, maybe we'll get you back on and talk a little more about this in the future.
Love to do it.
Thanks, buddy. And what's the temperature going to be in L.A. today?
In L.A., I don't think it's going to get much more than about 72.
Oh, you poor man.
I know.
Oh, it's just awful. All right, I'm gonna send you an air ticket, and you come to Chicago and shovel my walk for me, okay? The next time it's
snow. Well, we can use some snow. Just send it out here.
Okay, will do. That's on my agenda.
Okay, nice talking with you.
Take care, buddy.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Yes, Heather?
Update on website information via webmaster Kathleen.
Yeah.
It's not the computer you're using. It's the browser. If you're using Firefox or Chrome, you'll access the homepage fine. If you're using Internet Explorer, blue screen. She's working on that right now. It'll probably be fixed before the
hour's
over.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't it?
How do those things happen?
But yeah, so if you're on Firefox or Chrome, you can get www.mikenovak.net just fine. If you're on Internet Explorer like we have here at the station, you get this lovely royal blue. It's very
pretty.
Soothing. It is pretty. It's kind of like the horizon on a ship there.
Yeah,
like there's the ocean.
Like a cruise line.
There's the sky.
Yep.
Endless beautiful seas.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we all know that it's Super So Sunday. And not Super Sow Sunday.
No, it's Super So.
Super So Sunday. So if you're on Twitter later on the day, many of you are going to be sowing your seeds of discontent or of content. And so you're thinking about seeds, right? I mean, who isn't? And whether you're rooting for the Green Bay Planters or the Pittsburgh Cedars, you're also planning your spring and summer garden. I worked all day to come up with that.
It shows.
I know. It's like dough. When you work it too hard, it just lies there like a lump. Okay. But you're going to hear it next hour, too. And whether you're interested in vegetables or flowers, now is the time to get the seeds you need to make your garden a success. And get Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. And Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center is the place to get ready for the growing season. Their shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in. And they have the largest selection of seeds in their history. So there's no need to order from catalogs this year because SIDS has what you need, including certified organic seeds. You know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, along with expert advice and seed starting supplies. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. And here's a reminder from SIDS Floral Shops. Valentine's Day is just 8 days away. Visit SIDSonline.com to order Valentine's flowers today. And as Heather and I pointed out last week, flowers are cool.
Flowers are good.
Pink frou-frou bears are not.
Pink frou-frou bears are bad.
Bad. Okay.
The velvet roses, like the fake roses, or have you seen those? Silk roses? No good.
Real
like the
roses.
Real deal.
Go to SIDS.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Speaking of Dick Kay, I heard him talking about Mr. Cowgill yesterday. Always good stuff. Mighty House on 7 a.m., 7 to 9 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, a.m. and f.m., 7 to 9 on Saturday. And I haven't seen Mr. Ron or Joe Builder in a while.
I know.
Trixie? Miss those guys.
Miss them so much.
Yeah, go back this Sunday! I don't think they have much of a choice. It's Super So Sunday! We just said that, and I can't wait to see all of the Super So Sunday TV commercials. Whatever that means. And if you're already so diehard that you're sowing seeds on February 6th, well, darling, you need a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The January-February issue is the annual garden planning edition, complete with three holes punched in the side, so you can throw it into your binder and refer to it all year long. Every month, Adele Klein answers tough questions in the Q&A column in the front of the magazine. In this issue, she lets you know which plants can tolerate the salt you're putting down on your walks and driveways now and this morning and the next time we get hit with 20 inches of snow. You'll also learn the basics of how to plant a traffic-stopping container. Well, you know, that will happen soon.
Promise?
No, I can't. I can't promise that.
I want spring.
And, of course, there's my column on the inside back page. I won an award for it about 3,000 years ago, which might or might not be a reason to read it now. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to ChicagolandGardening.com. And I had some music, and it's right there. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's go to line one. Bring in our very own meteorologist, Rick DeMaio.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Rick. Hey, I got to admit, you nailed this baby last week.
Yeah, I kind of went all out last Saturday night and Sunday. I actually sent an email to Robert Feeder, sent one to Matt Smith, sent one to the news director at Channel 2 and Fox at about 10 a.m., and they all came back. I think it was by Tuesday afternoon, said, "We heard it here first." And, yeah, you know what? Every once in a while, you hit one and you feel good about it.
You hit that one out of the park.
That's what I was thinking,
I
yeah.
just wish the snow
China,
hadn't
right?
hit us that hard.
Man.
Well, you know what? I think we were talking about this, is that you had, like, basically all four of the, you know, medium and long-range models all kind of converging on the same solution, and usually the real big ones are actually, you know, pretty easy. It was almost like the night Hurricane Katrina on Friday crossed southern Florida. You said, oh, my God, this thing is going nowhere but west into the Gulf. And then once it, you know, intensifies and expands and moves northward, it's going to be a Category 5, and it's going to go somewhere within 100 miles of New Orleans. And usually the real big ones are real easy. It's the real sneaky ones. Like this little snow that, you know, came through last night. I thought it was going to occur sometime after about 9 o'clock. I wake up at 9 o'clock this morning, we got 2 inches on the ground. So you hit the big ones and sometimes you miss the small ones. So as long as your average evens out, you're doing okay.
Well, we were happy to have the warning. I mean, it played out pretty much exactly the way you said. What was so striking is when you described it and you compared it to the 67 and the
right.
maps that you saw from 67.
Yeah,
and
it was very much close to that.
Yeah.
It, the third worst one we've ever had?
Yeah, the blizzard of 67 was 23 inches, 99 was 21.6, and this was 20.2, but the thing about the blizzard of 67 is that thing was not forecasted. This thing was about as good of a forecast you can get. In fact, Tim Beechler, I think that's his first name, forecaster at the National Weather Service, put out a blizzard watch at 11 a.m. Sunday morning. He was, have to say, somewhat criticized by some of my, you know, colleagues in the academic and research community by going, you don't put a blizzard watch out, you know, 36 or actually 48 hours before the event occurs, because if it goes further north or further south, then you got to drop the blizzard watch and people are then expecting something to happen. But he's a pretty aggressive forecaster, and if you looked at a map of the United States or the central Midwest for about a day and a half, the northern Illinois, northwest Indiana area was the only one under a blizzard watch for almost 24 hours. Everybody else was kind of like going, well, we'll see, well, we'll see, well, we'll see. And sure enough, by Monday afternoon, everybody was under blizzard warning. So that was a pretty good call from him from that standpoint. The only, I think, when you talk about the glaring difference between this one and 67, not only was 67 not forecasted.
And why was that, Rick? Is it because they didn't have the right models for that?
Oh, not only the right models, but didn't have models per se that can handle you know, short-term deviations in the upper atmospheric flow. I mean, the amount of computer power and the amount of understanding that we have about the atmosphere now compared to, you know, 40 years ago is probably more than 1,000 or 10,000 times better these days. It really is, Mike. And from a standpoint of satellite and radar and the way we get the observations into, you know, we used to have computer models updated every 24 hours. Now we went to every 12, and now we're up to every 6.
And the other thing is not only that, you have so many different computers spitting out so many different scenarios.
I think the better way to say that is we have the same computers spitting out different scenarios based on different algorithms.
Right, okay.
So you can take an algorithm that has maybe 10 parts to it, and you'll get a fairly basic scenario. But then you can have an algorithm that has 220 parts to it, and you'll get a much more finite and much more detailed scenario. But however, sometimes when it's more detailed, you usually have sometimes a better chance of being wrong. And we've seen that with some of these high-resolution models where you look at the amount of data that it's getting into it and the amount of precipitation that it's spewing out, and you go, I don't buy it, you know. And that's the sign of an experienced forecaster, where you look at it and you go, I don't see. Because there were actually a couple of models that were punching out nearly 30 inches of snow. When you look at that, you go, nah, I don't think so. But the thing about this, and I still got to say this, is that the blizzard of 67, it was a 10-to-1 ratio. So every inch of water, you had 10 inches of snow. So it was a very heavy, wet snowfall. This one was more like a 15-to-1. This one was more like a champagne snow, where once it started, it blew around quite a bit. And I still say, and I talked about it on the show last Sunday, the fact that we had almost a mile of ice from the shoreline into Lake Michigan, that pretty much laid down literally a floor for when the snow fell, because it was blowing around so much and there was snow already on that pack of ice, that blew right across those inner one and two lanes, I should say the right and right center lane of Lakeshore Drive. I was on Lakeshore Drive at about 4 o'clock Tuesday afternoon. I had called Matt Smith of Streets and Sands. He's the media spokesman. I go, Matt, Lakeshore Drive is getting bad. It's only going to get worse. And the thing about it is all that snow, or at least I say all that packed ice, if you didn't have that, every single snowflake that fell in Lake Michigan obviously would have melted. And the only snow that would have been on Lakeshore Drive was the snow that was falling either in Lincoln Park, in other words, between the lake and Lakeshore Drive, or on Lakeshore Drive. And you wouldn't have had 3 and 4 foot drifts, because really by the time they closed Lakeshore Drive at about 7:50, we had about 4 inches of snow. And we've been able to drive through 4 inches of snow. But the fact that you had all that snow blowing off of the ice, adding to the snowfall what was falling, as well as the 1 to 2 foot drifts, I think that was really the key in why, A, the cars couldn't go anywhere, and, B, you couldn't get the plows on the road. So that was, I think, the real key factor that still to this day no one brought up at any of the press conferences on Tuesday or Wednesday.
That's amazing, Rick. That's a great observation.
Yeah.
And maybe you should have been making the call for Streets and Sand, because you could see that it was, and with those winds, you were getting winds off the lake that you weren't getting in other areas, and consistently. I'm sure you were.
It was one of these things as well. I was down around Adler Planetarium around 3 o'clock, and I'm looking at this, and I'm going, okay, this is not good, because this is, I think the snow actually hit about 2 hours ahead of time. I really do. And I called the weather service, and I said, guys, we already have whiteout conditions on Lakeshore Drive, and everything's moving at like 5 miles per hour. And the forecaster said, well, you know, the blizzard warning was up from 3 o'clock on, but it was already snowing really hard at 2 o'clock, and I think the city, because they knew that this was going to be a 3-day event, and I've seen them do this before, when it's a real long, drawn-out event, they try to get every single bang out of their basic buck of plowing, so they probably waited until the last possible minute to get the trucks out. Because quite honestly, I'm going down Lakeshore Drive. Usually when you have these like little 6-hour events of 1 to 2 inches of snow, you see the trucks basically sitting there an hour or two before it starts, and you can actually peer in the window and see the driver drinking that 22-ounce Big Gulp or Dunkin' Donuts, reading the paper, waiting for the snow to fall. There were no trucks out at that time, and I really think what they were doing is they were waiting until the snow had started, and then they deployed them. And quite honestly, I think they were actually caught a little short on that, and I don't think they admitted that.
That's a very interesting observation. Yeah, well, then it makes sense. If you know the crews are going to have to be out forever, I can see where you would just go, okay, let's figure out how to maximize the use of this.
Right. And one thing I really think they could have done, and I'm not here to bash the city because I think overall they've done a fantastic job in clearing the streets. I think what they really should have done was, as they said, they were monitoring the traffic on Lakeshore Drive, and I listened to Roscoe saying, and it was moving. It was moving at 5 to 8 miles per hour. Fine. All you have to do is have one accident, and now it's moving at 1 to 2 miles per hour. Now you got all these cars on Lakeshore Drive. What do you do? What they should have done was, at Oak Street Beach, they should have put a fire truck there and said, no more cars. At North Avenue, you should have put a police or fire truck there and said, no more cars. And at Fullerton Avenue, they should have said, no more cars. Because that's the spot between Oak Street and Fullerton where you basically, your ramps are coming in right at where the snow is coming off of Lincoln Park there and off of the ice off the lake. And they didn't do that. And by allowing more and more people, it kind of reminds me of a concert hall that takes 10,000 people, and you're allowing everybody to go in up to 15,000 and say, well, we'll just stand up against the wall there. You'll get a good view still. And that's what they did. And I think deep down inside, I really, really, really think Mayor Daley knows that they could have did a better job. And I think only because of the fact that he's not running for re-election, he kind of went in there with a little bit of a dogmatic view and said, we did a good a job as possible.
Yeah.
And I really fault him for that. I really do.
That's our meteorologist, Rick DeMaio, and that's one of the reasons I have him on this show, because he knows his stuff. And you wrote to me this morning to say that if we're at 49 inches of snow for the season. If we
right,
got
as of today, yeah.
One more inch, we get to 50, that would be the first time in history we had 4 years in a row with 50 inches of snow or more. So give me the brief story of how that fits into climate change, or does it, or is it just a four-year event?
I think when you look at the nation on average, I mean, Denver, Colorado, to this date, 14 inches of snow. New York City is up to 65 inches. So it's not that everybody's been getting a lot of snow. There hasn't been really one strong system in California. There hasn't been really one strong system in the desert Southwest. Granted, Dallas, you know, Fort Worth got 6 inches of snow, and there's still snow on the ground now. And here they have the Super Bowl playing this afternoon.
Yep.
So I think from a standpoint of climate change and climate variability, what was very odd was last year we had a very strong El Nino. This year we have a very strong La Nina. Those events used to be about 3 to 5 years apart. Now they seem to be happening more so every year. And every 1 to 2 years, which is really, really weird. So I think from a climate standpoint, climate experts, we used to be able to predict what was going to happen based on these long-term changes in the ocean, but now the oceans are actually changing every year to year and a half, and I think it's making us at least rethink how to predict long-term off of these medium-term changes. And I don't know if I have a real answer to it, but it's always been proven that when you have very strong La Nina patterns, you generally tend to have a storm track that kind of comes in from the northern Rockies, sweeps into the southern Midwest, and basically rides up the northeast. And usually once you get into that pattern in like mid-January, you kind of stay in it for about 3 months, and that's exactly what we're in right now. Now, when you think about why we were so cold in parts of the northeast, some people think that it was actually due to the fact that we had this very, very powerful and strong late-season tropical storm event where we had three different storms move up the East Coast, and that actually pushed a very, very large area of warm air up into Greenland. So the combination of that, the warm oceans in the Atlantic and in the colder oceans in the Pacific, has actually accentuated the pattern of snow in the Midwest and cold in the Northeast. You could look at this time and time again and say, okay, when we get this, when we get that, we get this. But no one really says, but when A is really strong and B is really strong, the changes that you see are twice as strong, and in the places where nothing happens twice as long. So if that makes any sense, what we're talking more about is not so much the change, but how the change then influences the variability. And what we've seen this winter is very dry conditions, very mild conditions, from basically the continental divide westward, and very cold and snowy conditions basically from the Mississippi River eastward. So again, it's not so much the change, but how the change has influenced the variability, and variability has obviously been quite high this winter.
Well, we're going to get over that 50-inch snow mark. Give us the maybe by this afternoon.
Maybe by this afternoon. So bottom line is we have this little area of low pressure moving through. We'll see a couple of inches of snow today. We may see an additional inch during the day on Monday early, but then the Arctic front comes through Monday afternoon, and this really sets the stage for, I think, the coldest air of the season. Monday temperatures mid-20s, falling into the single digits by the evening. Highs probably only 5 to 10 above Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And with all the snow cover, probably overnight lows down to about 10 below. The only saving grace is that, I don't know if you noticed the last couple of days, Mike and Heather, with some sunshine, sun is up until about 10 after 5. And I did a little bit of calculations here. By the end of the week, the sun is actually, on, I think on Thursday, sets, or at least we get the same amount of sunshine as we do as we get on Halloween. So once you get into that middle part of February, even though this is going to be some very, very cold air, I think psychologically it feels a little bit better. And usually, even when you got out yesterday afternoon, you felt that sun on your face. And you know what? It didn't feel that cold. Even though it was 28 degrees, that little bit of February sunshine actually wasn't as cold as it would have been, say, about a month and a half ago or so.
Yeah, I think also psychologically, I don't think people are aware of it, but the angle of the sun as well. You know,
oh, yeah.
You can feel it's a little higher. I don't think you're normally conscious of that,
but it
is. At some point, it's going to be spring.
Well, if next week we're talking, what is it? It's going to be the 13th and 14th of February. And at that point, we're 6 weeks away from the equinox. So a lot of light at the end of the tunnel, but I have to say this weather coming up this week is going to be coldest so far this season, Mike.
Okay, that's Rick DeMaio. You can go to I noticed somebody wrote that Safari is also not working well for my website at the moment. We're having issues with homepage of...
Yes, otherwise I would have tweeted demayoweather.com and put it up there, but I can't access the link on the homepage.
You can just go to demayoweather.com, and you don't have to go to my link from my page. Not today, anyway. We're working on it. See, Kathleen has been working on a new design for the homepage, and somehow something blew up.
A 2 instead of a Z.
Right. Some code
somewhere.
Got in there so that the certain browsers cannot access it at the moment. So we're working on it even as we speak.
So my last question here is, how long do you think Christina Aguilera is going to take to sing the national anthem?
Oh, God.
Oh, what's the over-under on it?
I think it's a minute 48.
You know what? The national anthem.
With the warbling she'll do for, like, I'm going maybe 2.5 minutes.
You mean one of those?
Yeah, it's like. It's like she's bouncing on something.
You know,
I don't know.
Yeah, she's kind of strange.
The national anthem should never go over a minute.
Unless you're at a Blackhawks game.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
Blackhawks games are the only exception. And when Jim Corneliusson sings at Bears games.
Make it quick, get out of there. Just you know it? It's not necessarily a pretty song. It's a difficult song to sing. Make it fast and let's get on with the sports.
Yeah, it should be a good game overall. I'm actually rooting for the Packers.
There you go. I love my Green
Bay
Packers.
You're so mean to me.
And oddly enough, you know, if they do any outside shots of the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, there's snow on the ground out there. They had 6 inches.
I know. Isn't that weird? That's just so strange.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, what would be even more strange is in a couple of years when the game is played up in New York in Giant Stadium, what happens if they get a 20-inch snow?
They will.
It'll be like Minnesota Stadium. Remember the footage of the snow coming in on the field?
But this is an outdoor stadium in New York. So if they have the Super Bowl up there and you have a snow event, it'll be kind of...
Oh, it will, and you can...
That would be a real football game, in my opinion.
You can just about guarantee it's going to happen. All right, I got to go, kids. Rick DeMaio Weather, we will talk next week, buddy.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Just when you think that the winter is going to be a quiet one, well, you get 20 inches of snow and 70-mile-per-hour winds. What would you do if one of your valuable trees took a hit? Perhaps the first thing is to call the Care of Trees. They have 24-hour emergency service.
Many people don't understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years and shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your tree. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Okay, coming up in the second hour of the program, we're already getting phone calls about it. And you're welcome to call 773-838-9278. The USDA's decision to allow genetically modified alfalfa and sugar beets to be planted this year in the United States, and we will have Teresa Marquez, who's from Organic Valley, on the program to talk about it. Like I said, if you want to comment, and there may be some folks, 773-838-9278. News coming up. We hope you'll stick around.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business is people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Second hour of the program, and this hour, as I mentioned before, we're going to begin to delve into the situation surrounding the USDA and its decisions, and there are multiple decisions now regarding two crops, alfalfa and sugar beets, both the genetically engineered products to be allowed to be planted in the United States. So let's just go right to line one and bring in Teresa Marquez, who's the chief marketing executive for Organic Valley. How are you, Teresa?
Good morning, Mike. I'm doing great, and good morning, Chicago.
And I imagine you're up in Wisconsin, right?
Yep.
You rooting for them Packers?
Oh, boy, you said it. We're sure looking forward to that game this afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're all out of time, Teresa. Oh, we can't talk to you. I love my Green
Stop
Bay
it!
Packers. Every time I sing that, Heather just... top of her head comes off.
So. You're going to put me in the fetal position on the floor.
But you know we Pack fans. We just can't help ourselves.
I understand.
You guys won it fair and square.
Yep. They beat up on them, so
I hope for a good football game today. That's all.
That would
me too.
Be fun
and a close one, so we can all have a lot of fun.
Really, because otherwise, who's going to stick around?
It's boring.
I'm kind of. You never know about these games, but it's hard to imagine that it's going to be a blowout. But you never know. You just never know.
Well, you've got two real talented teams, so it's going to be a great game.
Organic Valley has the distinction of being the nation's largest organic farming cooperative, more than 1,600 farmers in 33 states. Before we get into the issue here that I was talking, why don't you tell me a little bit more about Organic Valley, Teresa?
Well, you know, I'm very, very proud to work for Organic Valley. It certainly is some of the most meaningful work I've ever done. Can you imagine in the 1980s, 2,000 farmers were going out of business in Wisconsin, and it was a devastating time. And that's, you might say that...
And why was that?
Oh, wow, that's a very complex question, Mike, and it had a lot to do with biotech even, you know, the fact that agriculture just kept, it was either get bigger or get out.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you had little farms all over Illinois and Michigan and Wisconsin and all over the Midwest, you know, those farmers, small farmers, just they couldn't keep consolidating and getting bigger. And so just a lot of them dropped out. And so we were... you know, that's rural America. Each rural town was dependent, the bank, the grocery store, the post office, on farming, the farming community. So we watched a lot of shuttered creameries all across the Midwest, and as we saw the industrialization of agriculture. And we believed that there's room for small farmers. In fact, we should have diversity in farming, just like we should have diversity in everything. And it was, you might say, crop was the little phoenix that kind of got born out of the ashes. And just seven farmers said, wow, we want to try something different. We're going to try and work as a cooperative. We're going to try doing organic dairy. And so we started the first national, and you might say there were organic dairies popping up. But we saw that there was a citizen that wanted the kind of a product that we wanted to produce, and so we started linking with that consumer and started Crop Co-op with seven farmers 23 years ago. And at the time, everyone said, you can't do that. You will never succeed. I don't even know why you're bothering to try. Just get big or get out. And we said, no, we're going to keep trying to do this. And we don't care what anybody says. We're just going to do what we think we're going to do. And by the way, in those days, it was like, what do we have to lose? Not much. We were going out of business anyway. And so it's been a great success story for Crop. We started out, as I said, at zero, and today we're looking at a $650 million business. We've kept, you know, 1,651 farmers, all family farmers on the ground farming. Some of them only have 20 cows. We have two farmers that have 1,000 cows, but we all consider them family farmers, and we're pretty proud of what we did. And it surely relates to the topic of today, and that is, you know, OMG, the GMOs, they're coming at us.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
yeah.
Everyone's saying now, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? You know, it's hopeless. And but this never say die and get out there and keep fighting is in our DNA. And so that's the position we have. We are out there for the long haul, and we're going to fight this. And we're going to have our wins, and we're going to have our losses, our losses.
And well, and we're going to get back to this in a second because, folks, you know, I post these things on my website, and I tweet and I Facebook before the show to let folks know what I'm talking about, and they know that you're going to be on the show today, and some of them are already writing to me to ask me questions about the idea that what you represent is big organic biz versus what might be called small organic biz. And I don't want to get to that just yet. I want to get to the subject at hand, which is the government's decision to allow genetically engineered alfalfa and sugar beets to be planted this year. Let's start with alfalfa, because that happened about a week and a half ago. And it's the fourth largest U.S. field crop. It's roughly worth $8 billion, $8 to $10 billion. And it's grown on about 20 million acres as food for dairy cattle and other livestock. You have Organic Valley and other groups have come out against this decision, and I know that you've been fighting it for years because you took it to the courts.
Since 2005.
Yeah.
We slowed it down, and we sure annoyed the biotech industry, and they're used to getting their way. So it's been a long fight, and we're still fighting it.
But couldn't you say they got their way anyway? Because this is going to be done. Apparently, the surprising thing that Tom Vilsack decided was that the alfalfa is going to be planted without restriction, and you guys were hoping for at the very least some kind of restriction. Now, explain the difference between it being planted with restrictions and without.
Well, yes, you're correct. But we like to say they biotech railroads things, and that certainly they railroaded this one. Pretty strong, and they did it with the help of Congress, too. Congress had a session before this and really took Vilsack to the woodshed and said, why are you stalling on this? Vilsack was hoping that, by the way, Vilsack is pro-biotech, but he's also pro all kinds of agriculture. So, you know, he was, you know, more or less saying that there's certain, we need to protect our seed. That's the most important part of this. Both for our food security, for future generations, and as the USDA is concerned about, for those very lucrative export markets. You know, 40% of the seed that we have in alfalfa right now is going abroad to Japan, to Australia, to Europe, to Saudi Arabia.
And many of those countries have don't like the GE products here.
Well, actually, many of those countries have laws that forbid GMO technology.
And yet, I saw an article in a Montreal paper this week that says that the Obama administration is leaning on those governments and working through the World Trade Organization to try to get them to accept these GE products.
Well, you know, Obama is also pro-biotech, so anyone who doesn't think that he is would be wrong. I mean, after all, he came from Illinois. And he also has probably big contributions from the biotech industry. The biotech industry has given a lot of money to different campaigns in Congress and in the government.
So let's get back to that court decision. You filed a lawsuit against the release of the alfalfa seed, and that was in 2005, and there was a stay put on it, and it was, from what I understand, until it could be proven that it was safe. And that, I mean, you know, one of the things that Vilsack is saying is that, oh, no problem, it's not going to cause, it's perfectly safe.
First of all, I'd like to give the Center for Food Safety credit. It was their lawsuit, and we, our counsel worked with them and their lawyers, and also we provided money. In fact, we've actually been suing Monsanto. This is our third lawsuit against them. So all of this fighting requires money and legal and just a tremendous amount of work, hours and hours of work. So I want to give the Center for Food Safety some credit here. The reason why the USDA, and this is where it gets complicated, had what is called the Plant Protection Act of 2000, and it kind of overrode a lot of things that were regulations trying to control the release and certainly give at least the environmental impact study that has to go along with these releases some true teeth, so that you look at everything, not just the protection of plants. But the GMO industry got the Plant Protection Act passed, I think it was in 2000, that said that all that the USDA has to look at is whether it's a threat to plants. Now, there are over 1,000 studies that have shown that that GMOs are not safe, that there's a lot of evidence, peer-reviewed evidence, that say they're not safe. But right now, what we can determine is that the only research and scientific data that the USDA is looking at is this one, quote, does it threaten plants, not whether it threatens humans or the environment or other things. But the second thing, it's the usual reductionistic thinking on the USDA side, but it's given the biotech industry the fuel that they need to railroad these things through. And we can't see that the USDA is looking at any other scientific evidence than what is industry supported and funded. And well, that is not right. the public should be demanding that the USDA look at other evidence besides biotech-funded research.
Well, you find that in all kinds of products. You know, one of the things when I go out and do garden talks and tell people about products they, for instance, that they put on their lawns, those the analyses of those products come from the companies. Generally, to the EPA, and there's a lot of steps that are skipped, like how they interact with each other. When you have two, you know, you might get a MSDS for one chemical, but not necessarily how it interacts with another chemical.
Exactly, and that truly is a problem to only be looking at one kind of research. And you said something that I want to correct you on, Mike, and I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you and what you're doing with helping people learn about food and gardening and health, but know that the USDA never, in fact, either does the FDA or any government agency exactly say this is safe. What they do say is this poses an acceptable risk.
Well,
it's a small differentiation, but it's a big one.
Well, of course, but what they want you to believe is that it's perfectly safe. And yeah, okay, you're probably right about that. I mean, I can go see the exact words that Tom Vilsack spoke, and it's probably not, it's perfectly safe.
Yeah, they're all about risk assessment rather than the precautionary principle and so on.
Well, yeah, and I've spoken about the precautionary principle on this show, and the idea of that is that the onus should be on the companies to prove their product is safe, not on the public to prove that it's not safe. But that's where we are in this country, where groups like yours and others have to fight the government and have you know, get lawsuits in the courts just to prove that something's not safe because the companies and the government haven't done it themselves.
Right. And one of the you're bringing that back to our original questions. One of the concessions we wanted, besides very, very careful planning so that we don't get our seeds polluted, which is basically, you know, defining isolation distances is what they call that. You know, but, you know, and of course we've asked for mandatory labeling, and that one, boy, have we lost on that one. We've been asking for that for over a decade. And so we're losing, you know, on that as well. But the other thing we're asking for is, why do we have to pay for the tests if we get contaminated? Shouldn't the biotech industry pay for our testing programs, because we're going to have to start testing whether we're contaminated or not?
Well, that's a really good point. It's like they're rolling, they want their product out there. And one of the things we haven't even touched on is the idea that the product is Roundup ready. And what that means is that the product, this alfalfa, is resistant to Roundup, so you can spray Roundup. That won't die, but the weeds will. But we know what's been happening is that we're creating a whole generation of super weeds, and this has already been shown in various states. And
it's horrible.
And now we've got 20 more million acres that, and somebody just tweeted here to say, as over 90% of alfalfa is grown without herbicide, why then do we need the GE alfalfa?
Thank you, person out there. That is so true. We don't need GMO alfalfa. That is, unless you want to control all the seeds in the world and control all the markets and, you know, and make a lot of money. Because we have to be honest about this. Isn't this about money and about who's making it and who owns the seeds?
Well, yeah. I would think, you know, and it's proof once again that big business calls the shots in this country. And yes, Heather?
Well, I was just going to say, My Skinny Garden just tweeted, nobody has the money that Monsanto does except big companies like Organic Valley or something to do research to prove that this stuff isn't safe. But how do you maintain your healthy product and fight these giant companies?
All right, and let's get to that point.
Good question.
But Teresa, let's get to that point, because I've had a number of tweets, because there's been other things, and I've linked all this to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show, and believe me, I've put all kinds of different articles on there, various links, to, including a link to the Organic Consumers Association. Ronnie Cummins, who's the head of that, has accused you of selling out to big business, to the biotechs, at you and Whole Foods and Stonyfield Farm, and when I alluded to you being, you know, big organic business earlier, this is one of the things he's saying. And I'll be honest, I'm getting people who are taking that word, taking those phrases and writing to me and saying, ask her about this. How come they sold out to Monsanto?
I think that's funny. After three lawsuits, one of the lawsuits cost us $150,000. I think that's funny. I think that Monsanto would think that hilarious, that we're sellouts. I am completely angry at Ronnie for saying such things, and they're totally unsubstantiated. If he's going to make those kinds of threats or certainly allegations, he ought to substantiate it. Where has he found that we've done that? I just can't see it. The fact that we finally just said, okay, you're going to regulate, and where he's saying it is at a certain point in time, you know, the USDA, it was clear, they told us, we are going to deregulate alfalfa. The question is it with concessions or is it not? And so at that point in time, we said, well, if you're going to do it, well, we need these concessions. And for some reason, we're getting hammered for just talking to the USDA.
Well, in the final word here, they gave you nothing. Okay.
And we didn't get that.
You got nothing from the USDA.
We haven't given up yet. We're going to get something.
What can you expect to get? There are some people talking about some kind of compensation, and I'm using air quotes here around compensation for farmers who have problems, who suffer from the effects of the GE drift or whatever is going to happen.
You know, Mike, the easiest way to think about that and for individuals to think about it is if you drove into your neighbor's car, you would have to pay. When BP spilled oil all over, they're paying. If the GMO biotech community pollutes, they should pay, and they should also pay for the testing for it.
But as we know, Monsanto sues farmers who have suffered from drift into their fields and wins those cases. I mean,
no.
What crazy cockamamie logic is that? What kind of a country do we live in when the victim loses in court?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you, but that's why we need to keep getting some restrictions here. We can't give up here. We are not going to roll over and play dead here.
Well, what's your next? What's your strategy at this point?
I would first, you know, we do have strategies that are coming together right now. I mean, frankly, we should have been working on strategies 15 years ago as an industry. Because, you know, instead of saying stop GMOs, stop GMOs, stop GMOs, we probably should have been a little bit more sophisticated and said, okay, what if we don't stop GMOs? Let's have a contingency and, strategy instead of finally all of a sudden being faced with, oh, we're not stopping GMOs, what's our contingency? So in a way, we're kind of a little bit late here. But all that being said, Mike, you can count on, and also listeners, more lawsuits. And I don't think OCA is going to be funding those lawsuits. I have a feeling it's going to be those of us who have been in there since day one battling for organic that will be fighting and putting up the money for those lawsuits. We definitely have to get some new policy. We need to demand that the USDA revamp their antiquated policies so that we have something that that can protect us. There's also things that we can do on a state-by-state basis. Do you know that atrazine, which is a terrible endocrine-disrupting chemical, is banned in Dane County? How about we start with our local counties and find out ways that we can do a citizens' initiative?
Oh, yeah, we've talked about atrazine on the show and the dangers of atrazine. And, you know, with the danger, there's all kinds of products out there that are causing harm. And, again, it's because we don't practice the precautionary principle in this country that it makes it so hard for average citizens to get something done. Now, we've got a couple of phone calls here that I want to bring on. I want to go to line three and Mark from Lake Zurich. Hi, Mark. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Mike. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've never called in. But I'm involved in a company that sells nutrients to the biotech industry. But prior to that, I actually worked for a company that was involved in genetically engineering. And this relates kind of to corn, but more specifically, I want to explain to you what happened. we were involved in making a genetically engineered chymosin. Chymosin is the enzyme used for making cheese. It's widely used, and they normally sacrifice six-week-old calves and slaughter them for their stomach lining where this enzyme exists in nature. So our thought was, and a couple of other companies thought, where if you could genetically engineer it, the same enzyme, and grow it without killing the animals, that would be favorable to society, which it tends to be. Here's the problem. There were three competing companies. Our company was using Brachys, Saccharomyces cerevisiae. Another company, which isn't well known to the consumer, was using Aspergillus niger, which is a bread mold. Everybody gets it in their home. And the third company was Pfizer, and they were using E. coli as a host. Guess who got the approval?
The E. coli
Pfizer.
People.
The Pfizer people. We eventually all got it. But the bottom line is, the feedback or the throwback when people knew about it and heard about it, and I guess a guy named Rapkin was a real proponent of this, it never took off the way it should have. The bottom line of what I'm telling you is these things are extremely political. And Pfizer got an approval on a pathogen before two safe other hosts, if you're going to argue genetically engineer altogether. Now, 15 years later, I will come to tell you, I think that we need to go back to non-genetically engineered products. And I guess that's my bottom line. I wanted to tell you that little story because I don't think we talk about the politics of that enough.
What do you think the politics of that were in this particular case?
I think that Pfizer had huge connections with the FDA because they're used to getting drug approvals, whereas our company was a biotech company. You heard of Genentech, I suppose. We were an industrial subsidiary of Genentech, not Genentech proper. And another company was a Dutch biotech company. We were all doing this, and the rules at the time were you could get something, well, there were no rules because this was like one of the first genetically engineered products allowed in commerce and food. But the rules were, there were not natural mutations that occur in nature. And for every million or whatever, you get a certain number of variations that actually survive. And what you could do with genetically engineered, you could create a million different variants and then do a statistical probability that says, well, this is going to happen two times out of 1,000. This is going to happen 10 times out of 1,000. Well, if I remember correctly, if there's a chance of a normal mutation within 10% for every million mutations, then it would be possibly approved by the FDA. They made a statistical change. I know that's a little technical maybe for some of the people listening, but there is a rationale for letting certain things go. I don't necessarily agree with it anymore after about, like I said, about 15 years in the business. But you have to understand, it's not like they're going to take this real, real wild genetically modified thing and throw it in the environment. The most radical I remember is the built-in pesticide in the corn. What was it called? Starlight or something that Monsanto was doing?
Roundup Ready variety.
I mean, these things are not going to help us because basically humans and animals that rely on these crops will have to mutate to utilize them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, that's it's mutations that we're worried about. And we talked earlier about the super weeds that come that are developed because of this. And the promise of the biotechs was that we're going to use less and less herbicides because we have engineered these crops. Well, the truth of the matter is we're using more and more pesticides.
I got a dog at home that can't eat standard dog food because he seems to be reacting to wheat and corn products.
Yeah,
so I got to buy, you know, really expensive stuff But what I'm saying is I believe in genetic engineering for life-saving type of thing. But for standard things where we have the room to grow, where we have the room to produce milk, we have room to produce, we can produce cheese, let's go back to the normal stuff. We don't need this other stuff.
Yeah, well, we're on a road, though. That's going to be difficult, and that's
what... That sure is. We, you know, the thing about GMOs, it's no, like, going back.
Yeah, and thanks, Mark, for the phone call. I appreciate it. Yeah, you're right. And one of the things that you and I, both the term we used independently, I've discovered, is the floodgates, and it's which I put on my website, and you've written a piece about that, because now we've, okay, so in the past we've had canola, we've had corn, we've had soybeans, now we've got alfalfa. The sugar beets decision just came out on Friday.
Why do we need GMO roses? I'm just, I don't get it.
I don't know. I didn't even realize that was happening as well. So let me take one more phone call. And by the way, we're talking to Teresa Marquez, who's the chief marketing executive from Organic Valley. Let's go to line two and bring in Dan. You're on the Mike Novak Show, Dan.
Yeah, hi. In terms of understanding why the government is doing that, I've worked with them a lot in different issues. And it's King Korn, the movie King Korn, showed why they're doing it. They're very concerned. I mean, it's one reason. There's two reasons. One is they're very concerned about not having enough food to feed the people. And so with the economy and everything the way it is, this is an easy, cheap way to get cheap, empty calories into people, because the formula, as it says in King Korn, is that we're nine meals away from a revolution. And the last thing anybody wants who's in government is a revolution. Now, the second thing is to let them know that there is an alternative. I mean, this goes along with educating people about just how deadly GMO corn is. But products are GE products. But secondly, there are studies that show that if the farms around the cities are used to provide the food, they could provide the food for all the cities. This is a false threat that's held up. We have an alternative in place, which is the usual food that we grow, and the vastly improved ways of growing it organically. So we have to get it through to the government that they are not facing this dark choice, which all politicians fear.
Well, that, Dan, you're right. That is the meme, Teresa. That is the meme from Big Ag, which is, how can we possibly feed the world unless we have these genetic advances?
Well, you know, we are at peak food right now. There's just a ton of articles on it. I'm not going to be able to cite them right off the top, but anybody who wants to Google peak food will see that peak food has happened over the last couple, 3 years. And I suppose that can be debated, but it's darn close. So we aren't, you know, I was talking to, you know, someone from the UW-Madison.
Dan, that's a great addition to the conversation. One of the things you mentioned is that you want to get people to get informed about what the USDA really is doing, right?
Well, yeah, the USDA is a captive, like other things, it's a captive agency. I mean, we have to show that that's a fact. But the thing that allows the government and the people in government to be swayed is that they have this fear of an uprising. And it's not so much that they care about uprisings elsewhere, it's here.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that the path that they're on is going to save this country, because it's going to increase the health costs it's going to keep going up exponentially, causing diabetes and everything else, and that's going to get up way faster than anything else, plus the effect of the GMO corn. So
yep.
They have to know that the capacity of organic farms is great enough to feed the population right now if we just get off of this.
I think that's true, though. And
thanks a lot, Dan, for your contribution. Go ahead, Teresa.
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt.
I was about to say, when it comes to feeding the world, let's not say genetic engineering can do it. Let's not say organic can do it. All hands on deck, everybody. We all have to do it. Right now, we don't even have a world food plan. 2 billion people in the world are either very, very hungry or starving. And so, you know, this is kind of, I feel like this, that the USDA is not railroading through biotech because we're going to feed the world. I think they're doing it because biotech has billions of dollars invested, and we've stalled them actually getting their return on their investment. They have a huge investment they haven't made any money on, no money on, and don't forget that. And I get kind of upset when I see this, we have to feed the world soundbite because that's what it feels like. If we were seriously, all of us, every one of us, serious about feeding the world, we all have to work together to do that. And we can't be one agriculture or another. And the one thing that I will say I appreciate about Vilsack, he keeps saying it over and over again, we have to make room for all agriculture right now. We don't have a choice. I don't want to make room for GMOs, and that's getting shoved down my throat. I do at least appreciate the fact that he's saying that when it comes to revitalizing rural America, the small farmer is in organic is doing the best job. We are a $26.5 billion business, and we're actually smaller than the traditional agricultural business, especially in alfalfa.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. And we're running out of time here, but the idea being that you're saying you're a $26 billion business, organics, and yet my question is this a threat to organic farming? I mean, is this going to contaminate organics to the extent that the business collapses and that for all intents and purposes it doesn't exist?
I sure don't believe that, and not at all. In fact, I know that this is going to make us stronger than ever, and hopefully it will help us have a wake-up call where we work better together, all of us, even with OCA. We can't afford this infighting squabbling here. And we can't even afford, I mean, I know people think Organic Valley is this huge company, but we're not the big ones in the industry. I think General Mills is way bigger than we are, and so are some of the other big, big, big ones. Mm-hmm. But that being said, everybody who's concerned about our food now, let's stop the squabbling inside. Let's try and work together now. We have a big, big job.
Why are not people rising up then? Why are not, I know GMOs have been discussed for a long, long time, but why are people not, putting 10,000 people on LaSalle Avenue and blocking the Board of Trade until we get real answers about GE products?
Well, I don't know whether I can answer that, Mike. And I'm not exactly sure what the best tactics are. We're using the courts because we have to. I sure wish that we could organize a march on D.C. just to have a wake-up call to other people, the other citizens in the country. But mostly I think people don't know.
That's my point, is that this largely, it is reported, it's out there, you can find it, but it's not at the top of the list by any stretch of the imagination for the mainstream media.
And it's very complicated. Listen to our
yes.
two callers who just called.
Yeah.
It's so complicated. And I have to resist as a marketer trying to just put these into simple marketing sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to do.
Let me take one more phone call before I let you go, Teresa. And that is Richard, and you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, and welcome to Organic Valley. I'd like to thank you for all the work that you've done. One of the things when I go shopping at Whole Foods is that the competitive brands out there are Horizon. Most people don't know that that's owned by Dean Foods. And then at other stores, there's an organic brand out there called O. I believe that's at Jewel or Dominick's. I try to buy as much Organic Valley as possible, not just for the anti-GMO support, but because I know I visited farms over the years that it's made up of a whole bunch of small farmers. My suggestion would be to actively involve some of the local coffee shops in Chicagoland. And I don't mean the big chains like Starbucks and all of that, but the small independent coffee shops. When I frequent the coffee shops, I see cases and cases of Dean's milk being brought in and being used for specialty coffees. So here is a coffee house that uses maybe Metropolis, which is a very good locally roasted coffee, or Intelligentsia, and then they douse it with the cheapest junk out there, which is Dean's, simply because of their distribution network.
Richard, I would go further than that. I say, why not pressure the Starbucks of the world? At least it's a company that, to some degree, has a social conscience. So
they have domestic fair coffee. fair trade coffee.
Yeah, why not the same with their dairy products?
I think that's a very good
Starbucks
strategy.
When they first started out, they were very, and I hate to use the word progressive, but now it's tough to get a cup of organic coffee at Starbucks. So the independent coffee shops, the Intelligentsia, that you know, sell the Intelligentsia roasted coffee or the Metropolis, most people don't know, and they walk in there with their little kids and strollers and all of that, and they're consuming Dean's coffee. So why not a little logo right on the door next to the Intelligentsia coffee press logo that says Organic Valley Farmers?
Well, you know, and
more fashionable.
And you're right. It starts with consumer knowledge, and you have to go. There's steps to be taken there, Richard, and you pointed them out. First, you've got to find out which brands are truly organic. And if you go to the Cornucopia Institute, you see that Horizon's basically at the bottom of the list, and Organic Valley is very high on the list. You got to do that, and then you got to go to your coffee shop, and you have to ask, well, what kind of brands do you use? And you have to be savvy enough to know whether they are supporting truly organic businesses and small farmers. And it's legwork that a lot of people don't want to do.
Right.
And I think they should, just as they should ask whether if you go to a place that sells seafood, whether the catch is sustainable. And that's a lot of stuff to keep track of. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't do it. I'm just saying this is very difficult. And as Teresa pointed out earlier, some of the issues are very complex.
Sure.
But that's a great suggestion, Richard. I really appreciate you calling. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
I think that what Richard is telling us, though, is that this flood of GMO products, it definitely is going to open some new niches for businesses, and there will be a consumer who will be looking for that. And yeah, maybe it's not going to be 80% of the consuming public, maybe it'll just be 5, but you know, you have to start somewhere. And that, I think I hadn't even really thought about it, but yes, we should probably see a bunch of businesses now being much more aggressive about being non-GMO.
That is Teresa Marquez, Chief Marketing Executive, Organic Valley. We have just begun this conversation because I know that as a result of this, I'm going to get emails, I'm going to get phone calls, I'm going to get tweets. I haven't even been looking at my computer here to see what's coming in because I've been so wrapped up in the conversation. And I know that I'm going to take some heat for this, and you're going to continue to take heat for you know, and it's interesting. It's as I said to you before, we're theoretically on the same page here. We want more controls when it comes to GMOs.
You know, I want to say this, though, Mike, about the heat. I don't mind taking the heat because I'm thrilled that we get to watch democracy playing out for a change. We're watching biotech railroad. Well, why don't we, what happened to the democratic thought of dialogue? And I would like to encourage everyone. I'm unhappy when I see dialogue on the different Facebooks and blogs that are slinging mud. Let's get back to an honest dialogue. You know, I liked our caller, Dan, and what he had to say, and he came from the biotech industry. Democracy is about educating through talking with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to encourage everyone, let's get in the dialogue, but let's try and be civil about it, because it doesn't do a lot of good to just keep slinging mud.
Let's have
a dialogue. That's democracy.
And I can guarantee the biotechs are sipping their GE martinis right now and laughing over this. And I'm going to give you, before we go, okay, very quickly, line two. Yes, Kathleen.
My feeling is that we're dealing with the same situation that we have always dealt with in political movements. It is easier to attack each other than it is to attack the really strong bad guys who might hurt us. So we attack each other, and it defeats us. And we can't have this happening in this movement, too.
I think that's an excellent point, Kathleen.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you for saying that. And before I let you go, Teresa, three tweets that came in that I finally got around to that I think are very valuable. One says, your guest has the perfect platform to, quote, inform on their products, and they could organize protests. I'm not, you know, you don't have to respond to this. The second tweet is, it seems like Organic Valley doesn't get the power of the social media and the power of public outcries. And finally, this tweet that came in, I work in a large Chicago hospital. In our informal office poll, over 75% of people had never heard of Monsanto or GMO. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, that tells you what you're up against.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa, thank you for...
Thank you so much, Mike. I so appreciate you doing this democratic.
Well, I'm just trying to, you know, this is something people should know about. They're allowed to make their decisions on it. I am biased. I'm not a fan of GE products, especially if there's no restrictions. I think that we have put those out without knowing. I mean, like the sugar beets, we didn't even get to that, but apparently there are going to be some restrictions, but all the studies have not been done on what the effect would be of these products. Well, my feeling is, when you're done with the studies, get back to me, and then
also remember, there's a lot of studies they're not looking at. And that's what bothers me. There's 1,000 studies out there on the health aspects that they're not even considering.
All right. Well, I got a feeling we'll be talking more about this, Teresa.
Yeah, you sure opened up a big Pandora's box here, but I think it was already open.
I think it was, too. All right. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
This is Super So Sunday, right? You're obviously thinking about seeds. I mentioned that you might be rooting for, let's see if I can get these right again, the Green Bay Planters or the Pittsburgh Cedars. And you're also planning your spring and summer garden. Whether you're interested in vegetables or flowers, now is the time to get the seeds you need to make your garden a success. And SIDS Greenhouses and Garden Center is the place to get ready for growing season. Their shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in, and they have the largest selection of seeds in their history. So there's no need to order from catalogs this year, because SIDS has what you need, including certified organic seeds. You know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, along with expert advice and seed starting supplies. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hessert Boulevard. A reminder from SIDS Floral Shop: Valentine's Day is just 8 days away. Heather and I say, get real flowers for your sweetie. Whether it's a guy or a gal, I always get upset when guys don't
guys
get flowers.
Guys can get flowers,
I
too.
Like getting flowers,
yes,
okay?
Yes, they can.
And you can visit SIDSonline.com to order Valentine's flowers today.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Woo! All right. In 60 seconds or thereabouts, we're going to be talking to a farmer, Kim Marson from Sweet Home. What are we got?
I was going to say an organic farmer.
An organic farmer. We'll see what she's got to say about some of this. Now, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. All are part of 25 Illinois counties from the Wisconsin state line as far south as Champaign and Vermilion counties have confirmed or are likely to confirm cases of emerald ash borer. It is expected that every county in the state will eventually be affected, threatening the state's more than 100 million ash trees. Homeowners and civic leaders asking questions about their own trees and EAB are encouraged to contact a certified arborist like those at the Care of Trees. Certified arborists can assess trees, provide counsel on treatment and next steps, and ensure the safety of home and property should any trees need to be removed. If you're concerned about EAB, call upon the certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. This is my little shout out to Joe Builder. It's one of his faves.
kicking out the hits. ELO. Mike Novak on the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Let's immediately go to line one and bring in the very patient Kim Marson from Sweet Home Organics. How are you, Kim?
I'm just dandy.
Did you catch any of that conversation before you were on?
I did. I think I sweat. I was sweating.
You're not the only one. Well, you know, it's when people on the same side start to eat their own,
right.
That's a problem, you know? That is a problem.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out why that's going on. And Kathleen's point at the end was very good, that you've got to focus on the problem and try to solve that. And that's one of the things you're doing. I mean, this is your second time on the show, and
yep.
We talked about how you've got the Sweet Home Organics based out St. Charles Way.
Yep.
You're a commuter gardener. Mm-hmm. So what's going on the 6th of February as you prepare for the growing season?
Well, we've finished. We have our seeds. And I've decided when I'm going to plant all of my seeds, which, if you can imagine, is like a big orchestra. I feel like a little bit of a maestro in a sense. When do I want to start this? And when do I want to plant that?
Mm-hmm.
So getting that all going.
You know, and how do you make those decisions? I mean, you've got to have a chart there someplace. And, of course, it depends on the weather.
Right.
And you're not going to plant anything with 20 inches of snow on the ground.
No, it's more, you know, when do we start in the greenhouse and
yeah,
things
right.
like that. But
you do some sowing direct, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to wait for the ground for sure.
And where is your greenhouse? Is it on site?
We do have a hoop house on site. We're actually going to be partnering up with a local farmer to share their space because they have a more enclosed structure than ours. Because
mm-hmm.
last year we were sweating a little bit with freezing temperatures because we don't have heat in our hoop house. So
give me an example. This is your second year into
mm-hmm.
the mission here.
Mm-hmm.
An example of the type of decision that you made this week. For, you know, just give me something that you decided this week.
Good question. Decided that I was going to grow two kinds of fennel.
Okay. Why?
Well, to balance it out, you know, in case one peters out versus the other one, and then also maturity dates are different.
Mm-hmm. And what are the two types that you're planning to grow?
Perfection and Florence.
Okay, and why did you choose those?
I like High Mowing Seed Company
mm-hmm.
because they're all organic and I don't have to think about their seeds.
It's always good not to have to think.
Minimize the thinking options.
Yes, really.
And they had them both. And also the benefit of having worked on other people's farms, I've seen years of activity that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Florence was raised on one of those previous farms. So you kind of go with the stable of, yeah, this has worked for us before, and this perfection sounds interesting. Let's give it a shot.
So in addition to having chosen two types of fennel
yep.
for this year, what non-seed decisions are being made right now? How do you gear up for the season?
Well, we have a bunch of trainings that we've been attending that are coming up. So we've got a few this week and then a few next week.
Like where?
Well, Michael Fields has what they call a whole farm workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So they have various topics. So let's see. I'll tell you the titles. So next week is soil enhancement or enriching, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Friday is greenhouse management.
Excellent. So,
yeah.
You know, what's kind of fun about this is that, you know, you're doing this as a business, you're a farmer, and yet you're still a student. You're going to class.
It doesn't stop. Well, and what's beautiful about these sessions is, you know, it's kind of like class reunion, because we don't see other farmers in the middle of the season,
mm-hmm.
but during these educations we do.
And, and are they all new farmers, or do you have...
it's a good blend.
Good blend. It's established and newbies?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
What about your CSA? How you doing?
We're doing good. We introduced half shares So we're offering it basically the same size box, but every other week. So you can choose whether you want to start the season or finish the season. So you start the first week and go every odd, or start the second week and go every even.
Are your sales going to get you through the season so far, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm feeling good.
Oh, yeah. Hey, after all that anxiety in the first 45 minutes here of the second hour, we've got this positive energy. Well, that's Kim Marson from Sweet Home Organics, and if you want to get in on her CSA and help support her farm, you can go to my website and MikeNovak.net and log on to her link there, which is sweet-home-organics.com.
And the homepage is working.
And the homepage is up and working. Woohoo!
Good work, guys.
No, yeah. No, it wasn't me. It was Kathleen.
That was all Kathleen.
Yeah, trying to figure out how to make that work. I'm eager to hear what she has to say about what that was all about when I get home.
We're also doing seedling sales, where we've posted on our site a list of options that folks can pre-order, in essence, and then pick up at our farm stand.
And when will those be available?
Depends on what you're interested in growing. If you want to do your brassicas, things that can go in the ground earlier, as early as middle of April, otherwise middle of May.
I see it. I'm linked onto it right now. Yeah, 2011 seedling sale. So that's cool, and I hope that people will take advantage of that. We will talk again in a few weeks, Kim, and we might even be getting close to growing season at that point.
That's right.
Snappy J-Dog says Kim makes her want to become a farmer.
You're inspiring people, Kim.
Love it.
All right. Take care. We'll talk real soon.
Beautiful. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are you familiar with Aldo Leopold? He is considered the father of wildlife ecology. WRD Environmental would like you to remember something that Aldo Leopold wrote. He said, "The outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism." And I think we've been talking about that all day today. "Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. If the biota in the course of eons has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering." At WRD Environmental, they not only appreciate the complexity of our region's ecology, but are dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. WRD creates sustainable landscapes, from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic areas, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Wow, we've certainly got a lot of response to what we were talking about today.
Yep. Good show today, sir. Good show.
You too. Thank you, Heather. And like I said, it's just the beginning of this conversation. Oh, real quick, and I'm going to go out with a little of the music we started with.
It starts on Northern Hollywood. No one's getting through.
Hey, Heart, February's Heart Month. And worms have five hearts each day, so it could also be worm month. That's what Kathy Nesbitt from Kathy'sComposters.com says. Maybe we'll talk more about that next week.
Seedkeeper Company tweeted that she loved this song this morning.
So here we go. We go out with this.
Go green or go home.
Bye.
I would have if I